So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be discussing episode 2 of season 4 of Love During Lockup. On this episode, we meet inmate True, who has a heavily filtered, aspiring restaurateur girlfriend, Shantae. Rob insists Tenny meet his mom. Ayana plans a visit with Jamal, but may need to cancel because of her court date. Andrew buys more stuff for Candace, and Joey confesses his relapse with Michael to his family. If you like what you hear, please give us a rating, and if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things going with you?
They're going pretty good on this Sunday.
Yeah, it got so hot so fast here. It's like just winter, summer. Here we go. Summer's here. So that's good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, I do feel like summer is quickly approaching, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean, from teachers, summer is obviously better than not summer, for sure.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like anyone's heading into summer vacation here, but I guess the closest would be Andrew and Candace. Andrew is packing up the last of his things that includes the Valentino sandals, Louis Vuitton bag and watch, Chanel sunglasses, and smartphone. And he's zipping up the Louis Vuitton bag and rips off the tab on the zipper. Oops. I'm going to guess that it was a cheap knockoff, but we can talk about that later.
I literally put Louis Vuitton in quotes every time I wrote it down on my notes.
Yeah. Andrew is expecting 3 days on the road to get to Vegas to see his girlfriend of a year, Candace. Candace calls him excited to eat some real food because she's going to be released in just a couple days. Andrew then breaks the news that he ripped off the tab from her bag. She asks why he wasn't gentle, but she doesn't seem too mad, but she does instruct him to stop by any roadside stands to get her more gifts. He buys her a bunch of random tchotchkes and jewelry, spending at least another couple $100s. He realizes that it's expensive to date an inmate, but he also considers themselves married, so his money is their money. Candace wants them to look at homes in Vegas, and Andrew seems agreeable, but he is hesitant because he really wants her to get a travel pass so she can move to New Jersey. Candace then tells us that she's been divorced twice and has a son from her first marriage. Her ex has full custody and has full control over visitation. Candace wants to stay in Nevada while she gets some legal rights to her son. Andrew points out that in her profile that she said she was willing to relocate, so he would be very surprised if she didn't want to move. Andrew calls her outside of the prison and asks her if she's feeling overwhelmed, which then seems to trigger her, and she tells him not to ask her that, and if she's feeling something, she'll just let him know. She then tells us that she's an empath, which means she absorbs everyone's energy, which means a lot of anxiety in prison. She's worried she's not going to live up to his expectations or somehow will make him feel rejected or offend him based on her own insecurities having nothing to do with him. All right, so I guess we could start there. Like, do we buy at all that these are all authentically real designer stuff that he's getting her?
I don't think so, because the other thing that kind of goes hand in hand with this all being knockoffs is that a lot of this designer things are getting cheaper and cheaper all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like luxury, a Louis Vuitton luxury thing isn't – and I always kind of feel like there's certain brands that go with like, oh, this is the – this is what – I hate to say it like this, but this is what poor people think luxury is, and that goes with Louis Vuitton and Gucci and Armani, right? Those are three big ones that I think of that like real, actual, truly wealthy people do not bang with at all.
Well, I think they do, but they don't get the ones that are completely branded, right? They'll get the ones that are more subtly a brand, and if you know, you know, but if you don't, no big deal.
Right. But that's where the quality comes from. But I think when you have a thing like Gucci, right, for an example, Prada is another one that probably does it too. But the ones that are known, right, there's like two more or less brands that carry that one. There's the cheap one that they sell to the people like Candace here. And then there's the expensive ones they sell to the actual rich people, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the quality of those lower ones is no better than any quality of any bag you get at, like, probably Target or Macy's or whatever.
Yeah, well, I would say that there's a couple of suspicious things. Like, it was really hard to tell from the angle, but it didn't look like it had the lining, right? So there's like a certain kind of lining that they have, and it's like the little details like that. So one, I didn't notice the lining. Two, if this was like a legit Louis bag and he had ripped off the tab, you could for sure send it back get it repaired. And so it's like, it should be no big deal. And so the fact that he ripped it off, like, for one, it's kind of like, yeah, that kind of seems like poor quality craftsmanship, and that shouldn't be happening with, you know, a high-end bag like that. But also, let's say that it did happen, and he wasn't pulling at it. He literally was just zipping it up.
He just zipped it up. Yeah, it wasn't like he was doing anything crazy. It was literally while he was zipping it up, for sure.
Yeah, so that kind of, for one, is like, well, that doesn't seem like in line on an and on brand with that brand. So, like, but if he really did, like, if that was like a legit Louis bag, he could just go back and like get it replaced, especially since we're assuming it's new. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the other kind of sketchy thing is, I mean, and all for it, like, if you're getting something that's like name brand, but you're getting it like secondhand or something like that.
True, sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people put, buy it on whatever, but then that's that secondhand. He doesn't have the wherewithal, the knowledge to know if he's buying a knockoff from somebody that's selling it as a genuine article either.
Right. Yeah, I just, it's like, I don't understand how someone like this is like even falling for any of this. It's like, how many mm-hmm. times on this show have we seen someone just bleeding someone dry with all the things and the demands that they want? I want Chanel sunglasses. I want a smartphone. And it is up to you, my rando boyfriend, who I've barely spent any time with ever, to provide all that for me. And it's just like, and it never, I can't think of a single situation where it has gone well. And I'm talking about the relationship has gone well.
Sure.
And so it's like, I don't understand how more men can still be falling for this situation and like thinking like, oh, this is gonna like this. We're practically married. What's mine is yours. Like, you're not using me for money. We're gonna be together forever. It's like, I don't understand why you think that. It's fine to have hope, but to like sink all your money on a like a gamble just seems like stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I'm trying to think of, and I mean, obviously you're right, larger term, right? But mm-hmm. in this case, in the instance of the show, is there anybody who had a list of things you need to buy me, right?
Nope.
Where that relationship ended well? There hasn't been, right?
No, not a single one.
Anybody who starts off with, well, here's the list of things I had to buy her before we came here. Right. No, that's bad.
And we've certainly seen our fair share of that exact scenario happening.
Yes,
but
for sure.
We think about, I mean, I would even consider Brittany and Marcelino like a success story, even though they eventually ended in divorce, right? Mm-hmm. Because they for sure outlasted
majority. And they had a legitimate marriage relationship that dissolved, sure.
Yes, yeah. And they had children and they mm-hmm. like had a family, you know, and if anything, it's like Marcelino, the non-prisoner, is the one who like really messed it up. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, so if you consider that situation being a quote success story for the show, like she never demanded anything of him. And maybe he bought her something, like, I don't even remember, it was so long ago, but maybe he provided her a phone. But I mean, like, it, but that was it. I mean, she was not depending on him for anything. And I think, you know, it's like for these men to be so naive to be like, no, you know, she's not demanding or asking me. I like to give gifts. I'm, you know, providing these things because I love them. And then to also like feel like, oh, well, I'm not only giving them gifts, but it's like, how do you not see that it's your insecure way of like trying to keep them?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And yeah, that's not real from your end either. You're just like, I can
purchase
this.
You're trying to buy their love.
I can just buy this. I can just buy their love. Right.
Yeah.
Because it kind of trick it in that most of the women are good enough to be like, well, you don't have to buy me anything.
Right.
But if you did, here's an itemized list with prices and websites where you can buy them from. Right. It's like, well, okay, well, then they're asking for it. Right. And especially with this one specifically, because this one just has huge red flags way all over it, like to the extreme of everything we've ever seen, right? Down to, I'm an empath, right? I just can't be around people who have big emotions. So that means when he gets mad at her for not getting what he wants, she's just gonna, I'm an empath and I can't. Oh my goodness, right?
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that. And like his just pipe dream that because she wrote in her prison like pen pal profile willing to relocate that she's gonna ask for a travel pass. She's not asking for a travel pass. That's not happening.
No.
She literally wants to buy a house in Vegas because there's a kid that in custody involved. She's never coming to New Jersey, man.
Right. Like, right. I agree with you. Like, not only the empath thing, but her whole like trying to set up a scenario, you know, where we can sympathize with her side. She's like, oh, well, you know, what if I don't live up to his expectations or he feels rejected or if he feels a certain way? And it's not because of anything I did intentionally, it's my insecurities, you know? It's like she's trying to pave this preemptive excuse for things going terribly wrong where you might put it on her. And she's like, oh, no, I'm insecure. That's the only reason why this is happening.
Right. And like, what is she? I don't know. It's what am I insecure? Because it was even like, buy me tchotchkes from roadside stations. Like, who wants those? Those are awful.
Oh, I know. And then, like, he bought her a crap ton of stuff. And we only saw the bill at one of those things was, like, $240. So it's like, I don't know.
Man.
And it's like, you just met with a financial planner and you admitted that you didn't have enough money. And she actually did the math and showed how your income is not matching your outcome.
Yeah. But he's not afraid. He's not afraid to do that for love. It's
oh
just like,
gosh.
I don't know how many other, we clearly have people who've never watched this show before.
Yes.
But you also have just people who are like, yeah, but that's the other people. That's not me. Nobody, they don't understand my situation. And people always do that.
Yeah.
Right? People who break up, make this clear,
right.
Say, well, everybody says it's wrong and she's just using me for money, but they just don't know. I know better than they do because they don't know the true love that we have. Oh, 2 seconds later, crap, she broke up with me because I stopped buying her stuff. Damn it.
Like, oh my gosh, man. These people. Yeah.
All right. So let's go over to somebody else who let's talk new people. There was some buying things going on there. So this is Shantae and True. So we meet Shantae, who lives in Independence, Missouri, and she's counting down the 1 month. She has it on her phone, like how much days, hours, seconds until her man True is going to be coming home. So Shantae is 35 and True is 31. We see in the profiles. So she's making a lot of food. It is there. There's all kinds of different seafood. It looks like there was crawfish. There was shrimp. There was the thing. There was crab legs eventually. And True gives her a call. So she makes True. She kind of asks, you know, oh, you excited to come home in a month? What are you excited for? And of course, it's always sex. Whenever they're like, what are you excited for? And it's like, you know what I'm excited for. So anyway, Shantae talks about how much she loves this man who has been locked up for 12 years for robbery. So then we go to the correctional facility where True is being held. And in this time, we actually get to see him in person, like the cameras are allowed in the visitor's room. So he tells us that they met through Shantae's stepbrother, Fred, who I guess Shantae was in the car with them and they were on a speakerphone call. And it took a couple of pictures of him to get her to like be like, that guy's good looking enough or something, I guess. It was like the first one. She's like, yeah. And he was like, well, here's another picture of him. She was like, oh, okay, I can deal with that. So he hopes that whole – and he's going to hope that all holds up because they haven't met each other in person yet. So he thinks she – you know, he's not worried about like meeting in person and what she looks like. He's like, I've seen pictures. I know what she looks like. It's not going to be any kind of issue. Of course, then they show us the pictures that of her that are like heavily filtered and heavily edited pictures that we're seeing. It was like, I hope those weren't the pictures you're basing this on. But anyway, he doesn't see how it's any different than people who meet long distance and have a long distance relationship, like you met on Plenty of Fish. I don't know why that was the dating app he went with, but okay. So Shantae is interested. She tells us that she's actually interested in starting a restaurant, which I think is kind of half of the reason for all this food. And yeah. she tells True that she's meeting with an advisor about how to go about getting that started. So Shantae doesn't tells us she doesn't know if True came from God or the devil, because you know she loves the man, but he's getting her in all kinds of situations and trouble and stuff. So she said she spent probably about $30,000 on True already, just basically putting money on his books. So not to let all this good food go to waste, Shantae has some people, it looks like it's her daughter and a couple of nieces, over for a housewarming thing. So her daughter Monet is there, and like I said, a couple of her nieces. So they sit down to eat, and they eat with plastic gloves on and bibs on. Like, it wasn't lobster bibs, it was crab bibs, which made my heart hurt for Marilyn, because that means they weren't eating the crabs.
What's the difference?
I was like, yeah, I mean, she was eating crab legs, which is a very vastly inferior crab. I could talk about crabs forever, but we'll stop.
All right. Anyway,
it seems that the conversation is that the nieces and the daughter live in Kansas, I imagine KCK. So Shantae, or at least nearby. So Shantae had to move the 20 minutes or so away to Missouri because it's going to be easier for True to parole in Missouri because that's where he's locked up. So there's no travel passes, no state things like that. So, of course, for the time being, that means that Shantae is paying double mortgages because she wasn't able to sell the house in Kansas. So then they start to talk about how they're going to work through that and work through kind of the other stuff that's going to come from not just meeting in person, but immediately moving in together. So we also hear about like how now they are officially engaged because as she said, according to Shantae, he did the right thing because her father's not around. So he went through the only man that in her life that, you know, she cares about as much, which is her son. So there was a whole proposal, and then the son had the ring and put it on her finger and stuff like that. So one thing comes up in the conversation is that Shantae is the first black woman that True has dated. So the nieces and the daughter are very much like, that's a big red flag. What, who has he been dating before, and why is this going on? And then they keep talking about their concerns, and it's enough to bring Shantae to tears, even though we're just like, oh, we're just doing it because we care. So is the – I don't know how much we feel which is a bigger red flag, the I've only ever dated white women before, or I've sent this guy $30,000 and haven't seen him yet.
I think they kind of go hand in hand as a red flag, don't you think? Like, he is – his type is – women who are not black or women who are giving you money.
So far, that's what we know. Yes, the two types of women he's been involved with. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. They seem to kind of go hand in hand. It's like I think he's making allowances for more of a transactional relationship.
Right. And this one, I mean, I guess it doesn't seem – since we don't have like the list of materialistic goods, right, mm-hmm. that doesn't seem as bad as what we just saw from Candace and Andrew.
Yeah.
But it is still – it does seem from what we actually saw two perspectives that there is a little bit more of a trans – I would say True seemed more transactional in the relationship. And I'd be like, whatever. It's fine. Good enough. It'll work. This thing works for me, so it works. Whereas she's just like, I'm madly falling in love with this man. I care about him so much. And I don't know that we have a balance there.
Yeah, I think we need a little bit more information because, to be honest, it sounds like Shantae just has money, right? Who can just like up and have two homes that they're paying mortgages on? And I get that that's making her financially strapped at the moment. But yeah. I mean, the fact that you can do that at all seems like you're in a financially good place. So who knows? Maybe $30,000 just isn't that much.
I would say yes and no on that. Let me even back up because she did tell us how much the mortgages were. And her two mortgages put together, I'm pretty sure, are less than your mortgage.
Oh, gosh.
So, like, there is that goes into it.
Yeah. The other thing I would want to know is what exactly – what is the itemized list of things that she has purchased for $30,000? Because, you know, we've seen this a few times where a lot of that money is just paying for time on a phone call.
Yes,
right?
That's true.
And it's like pretty expensive. Like, I want to say there was someone that I can't remember. I want to say it was Sarah, Michael, and whoever the third person was. She had spent like $14,000 on phone calls. And so, you know, I can see, like, if, okay, it's $30,000, but let's say half of that is going towards just your communication. I can see that, and that doesn't seem as bad to me as the scenario where someone spent $30,000 buying their significant other a vehicle and a bunch of, like, you know, random goods that are really just, they're the ones benefiting from it instead of, you know, their relationship is benefiting from it.
Yeah, that's true. It's one thing to count the gas that it took you to drive out to the prison, mm-hmm. right? And it's another thing to be like, because we've seen people who did that, who was like, oh, yeah. I probably spent about $5,000 or $6,000. And they're like, well, does that include the phone calls and the trips? And they're like, oh, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Keep adding to that, right? That's just the money I gave them. So when people say, you're right, how much have I spent? If it is counting the things like the things that you must have in order to be in a relationship with them, being like being able to talk to them. But I mean, I also feel that we haven't had a bunch of success. That's another thing we've seen a lot in this show that is not very successful mm-hmm. is the we haven't seen each other in person until we get out of prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that has ever gone right, has it? I would say more than half the time. It's just the I don't like this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There have been a couple where it seems okay, but we just don't know how it ends. Like, sure. For example, that one lady from Florida, and she was always crying, and she was the jewelry lady.
I'm pretty sure
her and her dude didn't see each other before because he was in New Jersey, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And she went up there. And if anything, they're starting to fall apart because he started to realize like she was not as financially stable as she claimed to be. So they end up moving in with his mom or something?
Yeah, in Virginia. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, and so that was a situation where they seemed to be at least have an attraction to one another. So that was not, you know, why it was failing.
Yeah, I guess I was just the one I was thinking of is I can't remember their names. But remember the dude who met her at the bus stop with the blue suit?
Oh, like, gosh. Yes.
And like she immediately was like, I want nothing to do with this man. Like as soon as she saw him was like, no, absolutely not. Like,
yeah. No. Yeah. Yes. I remember she's the one with the booty.
Yes.
White girl with the booty.
Because he made her stop in the street. It's like, I'm going to look at that. It's like she was so grossed out instantaneously.
Right. And so she just like
the first dipped. Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that's pretty common. And it's like if there isn't that attraction, depending on the situation, they'll pretend that there's an attraction just to get through whatever.
Right.
But, you know, things clearly start to fall apart because the person just isn't attracted to them.
I mean, that's something we've all, and not all of us, but many people, anybody who's had any kind of experience dating on dating apps or anything, mm-hmm. right? That's something you kind of understand already,
yeah.
right? Like sometimes there were pictures and you saw them and they're like, okay. And you show up and you're like, yeah, it's different when they're in person.
Yeah.
And like, it's and so like to be this deep into a relationship, like engaged, and not even know what it feels like to be in their presence seems like so off kilter, such a gamble.
Well, yeah, and I feel like that's why people who have been dating like on apps and stuff like that for a while, that's part of the motivation for them to be so quick to take it offline because it's mm-hmm. like you can sit there and waste all your time. And if the physical attraction isn't there in real life, it's like you've just wasted all this time like building an online relationship when this has no chance of success outside.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So speaking of success outside, let's talk about Michael and Joey. So Joey is working out at the gym because he wants to work on his body for Michael. He's feeling pretty nervous because he just photoshopped a picture to send to the sergeant at the prison to prove that they had a relationship prior to Michael being in prison. So that way they can meet the requirements for a visit. The moment he sends the email, Michael calls him and tells him that the picture he sent is really bad, which then stresses Joey out because he already sent it. They change the subject to Joey's mom, and Michael is worried about meeting his mom because he's thinking that she'll attack him. Joey just says that maybe he deserves it. He tells us that he comes from a family of five and he wants a partner that can deal with all of them because they're pretty close. They're then talking about how many exes have met Joey's family, which then turns to Michael's body count. He claims he's had 6 or 7 men in prison, and outside he says it's very high, like over 100. This causes Joey to sigh deeply. Michael says that he wants to marry Joey, and he's never said that to anyone before. Michael says that the idea of marriage is weird to him with the monotony, but then he compares it to prison, and if he can do that, you know, maybe it's okay. Joey knows that Michael doesn't like to be questioned or interrogated. He's wondering if he should just cut it off now rather than wait around for what he kind of sees as the inevitable train wreck. Later, Michael video calls and meets the whole family. Joey's family seems positive and supportive, and they like that Michael was in the Marines, or at least Joey's dad does. They are concerned that Michael has an addiction because Joey has addiction in his family, and he's also been an addict. After the call, the family is having dinner and talking about the time Michael and Joey did drugs together, which wasn't all too long ago. Joey's dad, Emil, is shocked and upset to know that Joey used needles specifically. Emil wanted to know, but Joey said that he didn't want to worry him, and that's the reason why he hid it from him. His siblings are all crying. Emil tells them that addiction makes them feel alone, but they're never alone. Emil recalls the time that Joey overdosed and he saw him in the hospital just suffering. Emil lost his mom and uncles to addiction, and so he's really scared for Joey. Joey blames it on the depression and said that he wanted to feel something, which is why he relapsed. Michael told him not to be so hard on himself for making a mistake, and Joey thinks it's his turn to now support Michael in his sobriety. Okay, so do you agree with Emil that, like, addicts should not be together for... And, I mean, it has nothing to do with, like, you getting along, but it has to do with just, like, you know... Because Emil seems to think, like, addicts shouldn't be together because you'll trigger each other. And Joey seems to think that addicts should be together because you can support each other when one person is struggling.
I don't know. I don't know that being an addict yourself gives you any special expertise on how to support someone else, because the things they're struggling with are not exactly the same things that you struggle with, right?
Sure, sure.
And you can know what it's like to struggle, but but then when one person's struggling, don't they just... Isn't there a chance, like kind of Emil says, that they drag you into their struggle and now you're both struggling together and you both know the way you want to get out of it and you both are, right? And you just kind of feed off of each other's struggle.
Yeah.
Right? And feed off each other's struggle, spiral to the same place. So that I would tend to think of that. That's something I kind of wish I had actual, like, data to back up. Like,
yeah.
I'd like to see actual studies and worry things about, like, chances of relapse when you have addicts in your life. But I mean, we know that if the people are still using, because then I think you're definitely almost certainly going to have, if one person relapses, it makes the other person relapsing way more likely.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, okay, so I don't think there's an ultimate answer to this. So like you said, it would be interesting to see if they did studies or if there was data on it. But I do think it is dependent on... you know, individual, right? But these two individuals have proven that they trigger each other if they're using together. Right. And so I get where Emil's coming from. You know, like, it's not that two addicts shouldn't be together, but these two addicts specifically probably should not be together if one is relapsing and the other one's joining in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. It also seemed like it seems like he, you know, Joey blames his depression and thoughts about that, but it seemed like the situation they were talking about was them partying and doing drugs together. It didn't seem like it was a depressive episode of I don't know how else to escape. It seemed like they were having fun.
Yeah, and that was also weird to me because he was talking about, oh, the depression, I just felt really alone. But then he starts talking about Michael and I'm like, how do you feel really alone if you have Michael around? He's the one who did drugs with you.
Yeah, that's what I was confused about. It's like his kind of talk about it. And so I don't know if he's quite being honest with himself about what it is that actually triggered this, which is not good, because it seems it's hard to avoid that situation and avoid doing it again. when you're not sure what it was that actually triggered you in the first place.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's just their whole situation is really difficult. And what I don't understand is that Joey doesn't seem to really have a whole lot of confidence that this is going to last. And so it's like, I do wonder why you're like sticking around trying to make this happen if you can already kind of see the writing on the wall. And also, it's very concerning to me that how Michael kind of views marriage basically like another prison. I'm like,
yeah, that's not a great. What do you think about getting married? Well, if I did prison, then I could do that.
I think
that.
I could do like, that. Mm. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that is concerning. But yeah, right, especially if you're at all, you know, obviously worried about your sobriety. The idea that you're like, if this doesn't go well, I don't know, but I'm going to be able to stay sober. Also, I don't think it's going to go well. Like, it's like, yeah, that sounds like a very bad sign.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds kind of crazy. So, I don't know. And also, I am so confused. I know that this is love during lockup, but it seems like a lot of these people are getting released very soon.
Very soon, yeah.
Like, yeah, we're getting the same number of episodes that this would be a love after lockup.
Right, right. I mean, maybe it's going to be a super short, like a 5 or 6 season love during lockup, and we're going to go right to love after lockup after
maybe.
That.
Maybe.
But yes, it
but
seems
that also
like
seems dumb
everybody's like
too.
Within, most of them are like within a month.
Yeah, it seems dumb to me because it's like we get the same amount of footage of your love after lockup, right? And so it's like, okay, we get 5 or 6 episodes of this, but you could have just called it love after lockup and then continued on.
Right, because generally, I feel like in earlier seasons, it was 4 or 5 episodes before anybody got out. Generally,
right, usually. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right, so moving on. Let's talk Ayanna and Jamal. We had one small scene about Ayanna. So Ayanna's back home and she's calling Jamal about possibly doing an in-person visit, right? So she wants to be able to do that. Because she's going to have to go to prison for a little while and they're not going to be able to talk to each other. So obviously it's not going to be today, though, because today is the day where she has to drop her daughter off somewhere with moms or somebody because she has to go to an anger management class. So Jamal is there hoping, like Ayanna and like everybody, that she gets the minimum jail time of like 2 weeks instead of the maximum, which is like 6 weeks or something. So that means they won't be able – once she's in prison, they won't be able to talk to each other. The only way around it is to get a 3-way call and have somebody call both of them and connect them. But that's technically still against the rules. So if like the guards are in there, are listening in your phone call and can tell that's what you're doing, they can cut it off. So she says that, you know, she has her temperamental issues. So the anger management is something that she's doing to more or less make it look good for the court. Oh, I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to fix myself. You know, this is what I'm doing. Being proactive about it. So the class is really just a session with her social worker named Amanda, and it's at her house. So they discuss her situation, the DUI she had, her fights, and, you know, Ayanna says she doesn't think she really has an anger problem as much as she has an attitude problem. So that's where those fights came from. So she says she's always been the black sheep and her dad wasn't around to be her knight in shining armor, which kind of made her have to develop this tough shell, and she calls herself a broken girl that Jamal is fixing. So while she's talking these things over with Amanda, her lawyer calls. So evidently the judge, his schedule can't be changed. It has changed. So now her court date is 1 day earlier than it was supposed to be. And that just happens to be the date she was going to visit Jamal. So now that 3-year break that they have from seeing each other in person is going to have to be even longer. So Ayanna says she's emotionally wrecked by this, but tells Amanda that she's just like, keeping herself, because Amanda even asks, like, why are you not crying? Do you want to cry? She's like, yeah. And she's like, do you keep yourself from crying often? She's like, basically all the time. She it really does seem like Ayanna feels like she has the weight of the world on her shoulders and she has no time for anything for herself. And, you know, lots of things are just going too hard, too much stress. And that's kind of where we get to. That's where we leave off. So I guess, how much of this do you think is Ayanna, like, kind of actually, you know, thinking about what's causing her issues? And how much of it do you think is her just kind of telling the social worker what the social worker wants to hear to get her to be like, yes, this person is fine. You should let her out of prison.
Yeah, I feel like she's not really buying into this, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like things are kind of an act. like, I don't know. If she has the ability to kind of pop off the way that we saw in the video, I just find this reaction to be like an enormous amount of self-control for her. But then, on the other hand, that means she has the ability to have self-control. So just do that. Right.
Right.
I also felt this was like very interesting, and it's probably just the intro to anger management. But I would think that anger management is one, coming up with the root of, you know, what causes you to be angry. But I think also, you know, strategies on how to cope and deal with things that could upset you. And I feel like
de-escalate,
that. Yeah. I feel like that is not what was happening there. And I feel like those are the things that she kinds of needs. But if this is like an evaluation of how angry is she, I just don't know if they're really going to get a complete and true picture based on the kind of questioning and her, you know, thinking that it affects her prison sentence in some way.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm kind of curious as to how many of these things she's been to before.
Right.
Like, how much has she learned, like, the things you're supposed to say, the right things you're supposed to do, and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this judge thing kind of sucks. Like, it does suck that you're, like, at the whim of somebody else and they can move it forward. That's crazy that they can move it forward.
Right? Yeah.
And it's like, I had this whole plan and it was a thing. And they're like, yeah, no, it's going to be the day before. And you have to be here anyway. And I think it's kind of funny because I see a lot of that in the news now, right? Because, you know, not to get political, but Trump's trial is going on. There's a lot of people who are like, wait, so he just has to like be there all the time? He can't just be somewhere else doing what he needs to do? And it's like, yeah, no, that's how trials work. That's how it works for everybody.
Yeah.
If you have a job and you're trying to keep your job, but you're on trial, tough shit. You have to come to the trial instead.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. So do we have another couple?
We did. Yeah. So we also have Tenny and Rob, which is a little more.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Pretty explosive. So we see Tenny first, and she says she's reluctantly says she's getting ready for a workout because it really seems like it's Rob that wants the workout to happen more than she does.
Yeah.
So Rob is just 1 week away from release, and it was going to, like we talked about, very close. And it's going to bring a massive amount of relief to the house. So she changes into her workout clothes and then does a Zoom workout session with Rob, who's learned how to do, I don't know, some kind of beach body, like calisthenics, strength training stuff. And so Tenny thinks that the workout is – Rob always makes it more intense than it needs to be. And during the workout, he asks, like kind of during or after, he asks her to go visit his mother to try to mend the relationship between them before he gets home. So he doesn't know why their relationship is so strained. It seems that – and we kind of hear some sort of story about money and asking for money back and whatever. And so we're not sure what it is, but before Tenny fills us in with the whole story. So it seems that his mom, whose name is Kate, doesn't like Tenny at all because 4 years ago, Rob asked – it was a whole situation where he was like, hey, here's some of my money. Send it to my mom, which she did. And then Rob was like – within a couple of days was like, you know what? No, that's bullshit. Get my money back. And then Tenny had to go get the money back from mom. And Kate, still pretty mad about that situation 4 years later. So anyway, Tenny promises to go try to make things better. So then she's off to see Rob's mom for the first time in over 3 years. Remember, this money thing was 4 years ago. So they meet for lunch and Kate like is already, as soon as she walks in, won't even look up. Doesn't change her facial expression, doesn't say hi when Tenny comes in. So doesn't seem like it's going to go very well even from the beginning. So Kate starts off just like by asking, what are we here for? And Tenny says she wants to reconcile their differences because Rob wants them to before he gets out. So Kate then says that whatever, I have to deal with whatever my son wants, but I don't have to play happy, right? Because, you know, that thing happened with the money and I still have feelings about that. So I don't feel like I want to be here. This is dumb. So Tenny tells Kate that the whole thing, everything that happened, everything that was mad about was Rob's fault. It was Rob's idea. She was just doing what Rob asked when she gave the money. She was doing what Rob asked when she took back the money. And then Tenny tells Kate that she's, you know, that even before she took back the money, she tried to get out. She tried to be like, well, you already gave her the money. Just let her keep it. She asked Rob several times before he was like, no, go get the money. So, Rob's suggestion was, I don't know, Kate feels like, okay, that's fine, but still, you should have told me that And then Tenney says, I did try to tell you that, and you just yelled at me a lot and then kicked me out. So that didn't go over well. So then Kate rants for a bit, and it seems from her rant that the issue isn't even really specifically this money issue, but the fact that once Rob started dating Tenney, she stopped getting money from Rob. Like, Rob used to make sure she was taken care of and things like that. And then all this money instead, so basically Kate feels like the money that should be going to her is going to Tenney instead. And obviously Tenney doesn't deserve it. So it turns out that Rob has a successful business with his brother, and he's going to get out of prison with quite a bit of money in his savings account. So Kate says that, you know what was better? It was better when he dated Beep. Beep, of course, being the old girlfriend that he had before, because when he had that girlfriend, she was being taken care of. She was getting more money in that situation. That girl looked out for me. So Tenney, as soon as the old girlfriend is mentioned, is just like, this is disrespectful. I'm not staying for this. I cut it off and leaves. Okay, so I guess my first and most pressing question about the future of this relationship is, Rob and his brother run an unnamed business?
Yeah, seems what super kind of business sketchy. Is this? Yeah, unnamed. Well, it makes a lot of sense too why he's got respect.
His special exception. He's a shot caller in prison. Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
All that. Because it's like, okay, like illegal activity, clearly. That you can bribe people. You have money to bribe people.
Clearly, him and his brother have some sort of drug business, and he's using the money to bribe the guards, and that's why he gets to have a phone.
Like, yes, exactly. So, I don't know. It just all seems really super sketchy. I also am frustrated with Mom. Like, she's not the accountant in this situation. You know, she is the beneficiary, probably, of the situation, considering she's a single mom. But she's not the one who is saying, you know, or at the end of the day has a say in exactly how the money goes. She could have her opinions and say, I don't think Mom should be getting money, but it's not her money to have a say so. So why isn't Kate pissed at, like, her son? Her son is the one who's ultimately deciding not to give her money.
Because she doesn't believe that's true. Like, because – and not only does he ultimately not deciding, she feels like the girl he was with before, he was trying to not give Mom money, and the girl was like, no, we need to take care of Mom. And, like, that girl was convincing him to give Mom money, right? And Tenney is like – and so she thinks either one of two things are happening. Either – that stopped, and that's disrespect, because if the other girl did that, you should be doing that. Or B, Rob was going to give money anyway, and Tenney's talking him out of it.
Yeah.
Right? And Tenney's got a bad influence in here, as far as she's concerned, I was getting money for doing nothing. Now I'm not. The only thing that changed between those two situations is you showing up, so I don't care. Like, you're an asshole. I hate you. That's pretty much where we stand with Mom.
Which, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I don't know if I would care, you know? And I don't think Tenney does care. She doesn't seem to care. She'll get along with Mom, you know, if that's what it takes. But I don't think she actually cares if Mom likes her, because why would you care if a person who was so motivated by money that they're not getting it and they're like somehow accusing or wrongfully thinking it's you? Why would you care if that person likes you or not? Because clearly they have their own agenda, their own situation, their own issues, and it has nothing to do with you.
And if I wanted that person to like me, I could get them to like me next week. All I have to do is write them a big fat check.
Sure.
And they'll like me now. Like, so what does it matter? Like,
yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Like, I think Tenney is playing it the way that she should play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Rob told me to come out here and try to make nice. And you don't want to make nice, because only thing it's going to make nice is money. And you're not getting that from me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tenney has no money to give. So
It's all Rob's money.
Yeah. Take it up with Rob. Yeah.
And we've seen this inverse situation a few times too, where the person in prison is the one with the money. And it doesn't seem like Rob is like over lavishing. Although Tenney does, I mean, Kate does point out the car, basically was like, I'm mad because you're driving that car. Like,
I couldn't even tell what car it was. It was like a black SUV.
It was a black. It was a big new SUV. I don't know what kind it was myself either. I didn't pay attention that close.
Well, no, I couldn't even tell because like half of the car was covered by another car. I'm like, I don't know what car that is.
Yeah, it wasn't my unknowledgeable thing of car like logos. You couldn't see the car.
Right. So I don't know. Was it a nice car? I have no idea.
Nicer than my car. I know that. Probably nicer than Kate's car. If you're driving, if you were driving a 10-year-old compact and you're like, that's a big black SUV, it's nicer than mine.
Yeah, who knows? All right. So out of the group we saw this week, who would you say is your student of the week?
Oh, man. That was very difficult. I guess Tenny for making the best of a bad situation.
Yeah.
There was a no-win situation she walked into.
Oh, sure.
And she did it because she was asked to, and she got out as soon as it was like, well, this has gone farther than it can be recoverable. I'm out.
Right. No, I went with Tenny as well because Kate just, I was team Tenny in this argument. Sure. And so it was like, she was totally respectful and she was trying to open the lines of communication. And Kate seemed open to communication, but her logic was just not there, which made it very difficult to, like, be productive in their communication.
Well, I mean, and Kate has her own certain set of logic that we go with. Give me money good, not give me money bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much it.
Right. Who did you say was your dunce?
I went with Andrew this time. Just this whole thing and the whole situation of him, what he's hoping for from him, what he's giving her for what he's getting is like, this is just, we talked about the whole thing. How do you not see this, man? Like, how are you this willfully blind to what's going on?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Andrew is the dunce for this week, just because it's like, your financial advisor literally just told you, you cannot be spending any more money. And what does he do? Drop a couple $100 on stupid roadside gifts. These are roadside gifts to me. This was like so especially dumb of him because she has no idea what kind of roadside stands there are. You could literally buy her a bag of fruit and just be like, this is all I saw on the way over here. Like, how the hell would she know the difference? Like, I don't understand why he was just so compliant and spending all this money that he doesn't have.
I had to get rid of his rock at the biggest ball of twine because that makes sense. Yeah.
Right. And it's like, she doesn't know what's out there.
Are dumb. I don't understand. If you've ever, I feel like the roadside stands are kind of a kitschy, neat thing if you've never been to one, but you go to like one of them and you're like, this sucks. Why would I want any of this junk?
Oh my gosh. I know. Yeah. Buy her some alien jerky and call it a day. Like,
Yeah.
All right. What was your life lesson for the week?
So I said, whatever you have, a rough draft of something, let's run it by somebody else before you turn it in to the turn in your final product.
Oh gosh.
Going to Andrew with this Photoshop where somebody didn't have an arm. Like, it cut off. It was a very bad Photoshop.
Oh, you're talking about Joey and Joey.
Yeah. Andrew. Joey's Photoshop was extremely bad. And he was like, well, I wanted to show it to you, to Michael. Michael's like, this is awful. You have to redo it. He's like, I already turned it in. Like, no. Take that opinion before you turn it in.
Yeah. My life lesson is for Andrew. Like, if you're in a tight money situation, like, you do not need to be buying brand name stuff. You know, like, she can get a phone that isn't like a brand name. Like, just get her a phone, right? That's functioning. Get her sunglasses. You can get a cheap pair of sunglasses that are functioning as sunglasses. You can get her a pair of shoes that are functioning as shoes. You can get her a bag that's functioning as a bag.
And there's a lot of those things where it's like, I get you don't want to get something that's going to break in three seconds, right? Because you have to buy new ones. But like, sunglasses is a good example, right? Mm-hmm. Ray-Bans all cost over $100.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's not even a hugely expensive brand, right?
Right.
In terms of sunglasses. Mm-hmm. But sunglasses of a $20 range will last and will give you full UV protection. And will look more or less the same. It just won't have the brand logo on it.
Yeah.
So you're fine there. Like,
you can get functional stuff. It's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't know what's going to happen because, like we said, kind of in the middle of this, some of these people are getting out of prison real soon. So
really
I don't know.
Quickly.
Do we yes. stop seeing them after they get out of prison?
Or is it going to be like we have for our one 90-day couple where it's going to be like this week is going to last
one
prison visit or something that's going to last like for three episodes.
Oh my goodness, I hope not. All right, well, as far as we know, we will be back next week. And mm-hmm. so until then.
All right, see everybody then.
All right, bye. Okay,
bye.